Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show, brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Charles J. Stecker, Jr., but you all know me as Charlie, and I welcome you tonight. It is Wednesday night. Yes, Wednesday night. Once again, our special guest show on Wednesday night. And folks, I got online a little earlier and happened to look, actually just a few moments ago, to see who our special guest was tonight. And no, I will not be talking to myself tonight, although I will be talking to another Charles. And we'll find out if he has a nickname he prefers when we get him online. He also happens to be from my hometown, my birthplace as well, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So we got two Philly guys, two Philly boys going to be in the house tonight. Get ready for a really amazing show. I do want to remind our listeners that if you want to call in, and we would be absolutely glorified by having you call in, we would love it. You can call in to 646-595-2118 and be a member of the panel. And what does a panel member do? What an awesome question. I'm glad you asked that. A panel member will come on before we bring Charles on and introduce themselves and where they're from, and say a quick hello, and then we'll mute your mic. And after we bring all the panelists on, we'll then bring our special guest on, and he'll begin to share his story in whatever way he's comfortable in sharing it. We do have a general format, which is, you know, early years, teen years, adult years, today, you know. But, again, this is Charles's night, and that means however Charles is comfortable sharing his story is how it will be shared. I do ask you, and so about every 15, 20 minutes, we will then bring each of the panel members on to interact with Charles and share their insights and ask them questions and things like that. I do ask that you keep the topic of your questions or your insights relevant to what Charles' story is tonight. I know sometimes we get lost in our own stories, and understandably so, but tonight is Charles' special night, and we want to make sure that he feels that warmth that we always give our special guests. The welcome to our new brother, to our family here of NASCA, and just this encouragement to him. Okay, so now that the housekeeping's out of the way, let me share with you a little bit about Charles' biography that I have here. As I already said, tonight's special guest is Charles De Leon. He is from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He is a survivor of childhood sexual abuse who's directed a documentary titled The 20-Year Journey. Oh, Charles, we have got to talk, man. It is about male survivors of childhood sexual abuse. Charles shares, he grew up in a section of North Philly that earned the nickname the Badlands. Oh, I know that area well, Charles. He learned early on that if you wanted to make it, you had to be hard. A lesson he learned from his father early in life. His father was physically abusive towards his mother, and around the time he was five, his father started to sexually abuse him. Charles never fully understood the impact this abuse had on him. I was a very angry child and would get into fights daily. Later, I would understand this anger was just my masking the fear and self-loathing. As an adolescent, I questioned my own sexuality, and it scared me. I felt unworthy of love, unworthy of life. I became angry at God because in my mind, he hated me first. He gave me Johnny as a father and left me unprotected like a lamb to the slaughter. At 22, 2 weeks before my son was born, I had a panic attack. It dawned on me that I may be my father. I was scared that I would do to my son what my father did to me, or at best, I would abandon my family. Charles is a mental health counselor in Philadelphia who currently works as a clinical supervisor for a partial hospitalization program for preschool-aged children. I've been working in the mental health field for over 15 years, he says. 6 years ago, I came out publicly to discuss my sexual abuse as a child. The weight of that abuse at the age of 5, I still carry with me today. Wow, Charles, I am so, you know, I say I'm so looking forward to getting you on the show. And there's that part of me that says, boy, I look forward to the day, brother, that we don't have these stories anymore. That when we go to look for a special guest for a Wednesday night show, we're hard pressed to find one. But here we are again. And tonight we are definitely welcoming you with open arms. I want to remind our listeners that want to call in. The call in number 646-595-2118. Please join our panel. If you've never called in, you're not certain if you want to, or you're afraid to come on air and have your voice heard, it's okay. Just let Joe, my co-host, know when she checks in with you what you want to do. You just want to call in and take that first step towards having your voice heard. And she'll let me know, and we won't bring you live on the panel, but you'll be there. But again, please call in 646-595-2118. I am going to bring on the panelists that I currently have. And our panel does grow as the show goes along. I've seen that happen numerous times, and I know it's going to happen tonight. So let's go ahead and get our panelists on. I'll introduce who they are, where they're from, and then let them take over from there. My first panelist this evening is none other than my co-host, Joe from Oregon. And Joe is an ambassador for Oregon for NASCA, and if it's being done at NASCA, Joe's probably involved somehow. Joe, good evening and welcome, sis.
Thank you. Thank you for the nice introduction. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I was quite when I opened up tonight's show and I saw where the special guest was from, I had to reach out to him. We had a real quick chat on Facebook Messenger just before the show started, and I know his area of Philadelphia very well. So looking forward to this.
All right. Wow. All right.
Well,
I'm looking forward to hearing too. Thank you.
Absolutely. And you do me a huge favor. I know you're always amazing at doing things. Can you get some word out on Facebook to get some people to call in, if you don't mind?
Is that okay.
I don't know if you can do that.
I will do that.
From where you're at, I appreciate
mm-hmm.
it. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate you.
Okay.
Thanks,
uh-huh. Yep.
And from the great state of Oregon, we're going to go just a little north of that. We're going to head up to Washington State, where Penelope is, and say good evening, Penelope, and welcome.
Hi, Charlie. Good evening. Thank you, as usual, for the warm welcome. I am really looking forward to – oh, sorry.
I just want to ask you real quick. Please forgive me. Are you our Washington ambassador?
I am. I'm one of – there are two of us. I am one of the two.
And I do apologize for not introducing you. So Penelope is our ambassador for Washington State, and I happen to be blessed to be the ambassador for Pennsylvania. But go ahead, Penelope. I'm sorry. You were going to say something. I interrupted you.
No, I just wanted to say, well, first of all, it's always a privilege to be on the show, especially when you're the host, Charlie, because you always bring a smile to my face. But I did read the bio about the Charles, who will be our special guest tonight, and I really am looking forward to the show and hearing about his story and about the work he's doing now and how he's helping a lot of other kids in the Philadelphia area. So very much looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Penelope. And we always appreciate you being here and your kindness to myself and the show and that, and love having you as a sister. And thank you for reaching out the other day when I was having my struggle there. I truly appreciate it.
So, well, we all walk in this together.
Absolutely. And if you can, do me a favor, Penelope, if you have the ability to encourage people to call in, I'd greatly appreciate that as well. Well,
I will.
Thank you. Well, folks, here we go. We are going to get this show on the road. Charles is patiently waiting, and we're going to find out whether he likes to be going, Charles, Chuck, Jolly, late for dinner, or whatever it is. Let's get him on. Good evening and welcome, brother.
Hello, Charles. It's a pleasure, man.
I feel like we're talking to ourselves. So what do you prefer
exactly.
to go by? Do you have a
So my friends do call me Chaz, so I can go by Chaz if that makes things easier.
There we go. I was a Chaz way back when. I remember that name. Okay, we'll do the Chaz. I didn't pick that one out of the hat. Cool. And being that my last place I lived was South Philly, we say, hey, Charlie. Well,
yeah,
welcome, Chaz.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be
and,
here.
And absolutely. And really, like I mentioned as I was bringing you into the show, you know, it's exciting to have you here, but it'd be more exciting, and I'm sure you agree, to that day when we have to go find somebody and say, we're having a hard time finding guests for the show because this abuse is starting to dissipate, you know. But you're here, and it's your night. This is your first time on with us, correct?
This is my first time on with you, yes.
Wonderful. And have you shared your story publicly anywhere else yet?
No. On a blog, sorry, I first did it on a blog. I wrote a blog about it. This is the first time that I'm actually really sitting down and talking about it like this, in this format.
Well, Charles, I'm going to tell you, or Chaz, I apologize, Chaz, I'm going to tell you that this is your show, and how you want to share it, it's your show, your story, your life, and how you want to share it's going to be directed by you. I can help you along the way if you need a break. If you don't, if when our panelists come on and they ask questions, if you're not comfortable answering the questions, you don't feel obligated to answer it. Okay, we want you to be comfortable. We want you to come into the show as comfortable as possible. And we definitely want you leaving here knowing that you were warmly received and duly respected.
I appreciate
that. Oh yeah, you're very welcome. So, boy, I can identify with a lot of your story. Not all of it, obviously, because we all have different experiences. But so you grew up in North Philly. Now, were you born and you were born and raised your entire life up there in North Philly?
Yeah, I was born and raised pretty much out in Philadelphia, different parts of North Philly, really. I believe we lived in Logan, and currently I'm in the Northeast. But, yeah, big block of my life, maybe 30 years of my life I spent in North Philly.
Wow, that's not an easy place. And, folks, you're going to hear, it's just because Charles and I or Chaz and I are both from Philly. So you may hear us talk about different sections of Philadelphia, like you just said, Logan. Philadelphia's broken up in little sections and pockets that has all the different names, Logan and Alleyne and Germantown, and oh, it goes on and on. So if you hear those things, we're still talking about Philadelphia. It's just neighborhoods, right? Or on the Catholic side, it's what parish are you from? So,
exactly.
But
exactly. Pretty much.
Yeah. So Chaz, so you grew up there. Up there, I lived not too far from there. Later on in life, in my later teen years, I lived in Alleyne. So I know it a little bit. So wow. So your own father was your abuser.
Yeah.
Can't imagine.
So my earliest memory of my father is really him beating on my mother. So my mother came from Ecuador in the 60s. She migrated over. And my father was Puerto Rican, so he's already American. So my mom was here for maybe in the country for about 2 years when she met my father, and they quickly, it was a whirlwind relationship and everything was great, and they got married pretty fairly quickly. So I am the third of four children. I have an older brother, an older sister, then come me, and I also have a younger sister. And she had us all pretty much within 5 years. So my brother's 4 years older than me, and my sister's a year younger, my younger sister. So within 5 years, she had all four of us. I also remember a lot after my father would either beat on my mother, he would always do something sweet. He brought home a dog for us. He would take us for ice creams and things like that to kind of win my mom over again. And to be honest, when he first started molesting me, it didn't register that it was something bad. He's my father, right? So I didn't I didn't feel like it was wrong. And actually, the fact that I felt that it wasn't wrong, and if I'm being honest, part of me was kind of okay with it, would just bother me when I became a teen. But so really, a lot of the molestation part, I kind of went along with. I didn't see no problem with it. I wasn't scared. I just felt like it was what fathers and sons do. My father was very charming and when he wanted to be. And the time that it turned violent for me, I was around five. I'm not sure if I was five, quite five yet. But I remember my father picking me up from my grandmother's house. My mom and my father had argued, and he came by sheeply, and he wanted to know who wanted to come home with him, and I'm the only one that said, okay. And my mom stayed behind with my my brother and my two sisters and my grandma's for a little while longer. We went home, and we played in the basement, and the basement was a lot of the molestation happened. And in the basement, we had this huge closet, and I was sitting there playing with my Batman doll, and he called me over, and I ignored him because I didn't want to stop playing. And then he yelled at me, and the way he yelled at me reminded me of him beating my mom. That's like the way he never spoke to me like that before, so it was, that's the way he speaks when he beats my mom, you know, and I had this feeling, and I went over to him, and he put me in the closet, and I didn't want to go in the closet. I was scared in the closet.
Sure.
And at that point, he made me perform oral on him. And when I pulled away, he got mad, and he penetrated. So, and then it just, I can't remember all of that. I remember most of it, you know, but the part that I do remember is like afterwards, like he made me feel like it was my fault. Like it became like that because it wasn't like that before. Previous to that, I never did anything like that. Like it was never oral and never penetrated. I mean, it was more like him touching me and me touching him. He was telling me where he wanted to be touched and stuff like that. He took me upstairs. He gave me a bath. He cleaned me up. And then he was like telling me, because usually he got me something after he did things to me. And he told me tomorrow that we would go out and get some ice cream and some stuff, and he also told me in Spanish, he spoke to me in Spanish, very calmly, very nicely, that if I told my mom, he would have to kill her, and that would be my fault. So the abuse continued until my mom left my father, and she left him. I was still five, or maybe just turning six. So this lasted probably about a year. Then once he had no longer access to me, it was over. And I really didn't think about it for years. I was five. When I was 16, I told my mom because she was watching. She was watching a TV show. It was a Spanish talk show called Cristina. And that's like all the Latinos, they loved this show. Okay. So at the time, it was the 90s. And there was a boy sharing his story about his uncle molesting him. So I felt like it was my time to tell my mom, you know, hey, mom, this happened to me. And also at that time, I was questioning my sexuality. I was wondering why I was okay in the beginning with my father touching me like that. It made me wonder, what did I do to attract him to me? And these were things in my head that I couldn't process. At 16 years old, I couldn't process it. So I told my mom, and I never told her that he penetrated me because at the time I felt like when I told her that he molested me, she like freaked out. So I didn't want to make things worse for her.
Right.
But it was almost like she felt like she was protecting. We had this conversation as when I became an adult, but she felt like she was protecting me by telling me to keep it to myself or not to tell others because she was worried how they would look at me, I guess is what she told me at the time. But so I kept it quiet, you know, and it was weird because it wasn't weird. It was almost like psychological, the fact that my father told me to stay quiet. My mom told me to stay quiet. So I learned all my life just to stay quiet. I didn't speak up for myself. I did it through rage. You know, I would get into fights. You know, and that's kind of was my outlet. I was a pretty good athlete. So when I was playing football or wrestling, that gave me an outlet. When I got into martial arts, that also gave me an outlet. If anybody, until I got married and my wife and I spoke about it and I shared with her my experience with my father. Mm-hmm. And even at that point, I did not understand the impact it had on my life. I didn't understand. Me being a mental health therapist and working with children and helping children communicate and discuss their emotions, I still find it challenging to do that when it's about me. So between my 20s to about 35, it was just a constant struggle for me to kind of understand why I feel so angry. I had no idea that something that happened to me when I was 5 years old could affect me as a grown man. I didn't have that understanding at that point. Around the time I was 34, 35, my wife and I separated. She got tired of my non-communication. She just told me, you have to get help for your abuse. And I didn't understand it. I'm like, you and I have the problem. Why do I have to go and get counseling?
Right.
She saw what I didn't see, right? She saw that I was hypervigilant. She saw that I was unable to fully trust people. And she was honest. My wife has been a rock since I've met her. And I've only fully started trusting her 15 years into our marriage after I went to counseling. So at 35, I went to counseling. We discussed my abuse. And after that, I can see how I set these patterns in my life to keep myself protected. I saw that my aggression was really masking my anger and my fear. I saw that that it was normal to have these feelings of sexuality. And at that point, I kind of knew it was normal, but it's validating to sit there with a therapist and have the therapist kind of walk you through it when you start believing it, as opposed to just saying, yeah. So there was a lot of cognitive distortions that I had to break down, you know, things that I automatically used to think about myself. So if I ask for help, now I'm weak, right? So these are things that I had to break down, saying, no, you're allowed to ask for help. You know, I don't have to be perfect. I felt like I had to be perfect to be loved. You know, it's just these things that I kind of had to break down. I don't have to be perfect. you know. These are things that I just felt. You know, and also the other part of that which I struggled with was the love for my father. Because while my father was my abuser and the protagonist of my story, I also felt abandoned by him when he left. You know, he chose not to be part of our life. And I'm okay with it at this point. I think I digressed a bit. Hold on. So I'm 35. I do therapy. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Charles.
No. Be sorry. I got to tell you, Chaz, you're doing just amazing with never having actually put this together in a public forum, speaking it out like you are now. Just really coming through with clarity and understanding. And you sound like me. We talk our stories almost like, and hear me on this for a moment and see if you relate, almost like we're clinically talking about someone else yet it's ourselves. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, because I'm hearing you talk to me.
Yeah, I think part of that is I want to make sure I tell my story right. But the other part, it also kind of protects me. It's difficult even today. Today I'm 45. You know, I'm 45 years old, and it's still difficult to talk about my abuse because there are things that have lingered because of it, you know. But going to therapy, I went hard, you know. I didn't just go through the motions. I lived it, I breathed it, I practiced, followed the homework that my therapist gave me. She was very talented, very skillful, very compassionate and patient, because in the beginning I was very resistant to therapy. You know, I was very resistant to therapy. I was going because I did not want my wife, we already separated, but I wanted her back, and I wanted to prove to her that I would do whatever I had to do to win her back. And that's the only reason I went to therapy. She doesn't leave me, I don't go to therapy. That's the honest of God truth. So in that sense, she saved me. I didn't understand. You know, it was so hard for me because I always put on this smile, and I'm always the happy guy. Charlie, you know, he's a sociable one. He's the one that does this. And all of that for me was fake because I was scared somebody would see me and see that I was scared and see that I was weak, you know, or look at me like, you know, that's the abused person. And I couldn't have that.
Right. Chaz, we're going to, if you don't mind, it's okay with you. Again, this is your show. It's your time tonight. I would like to do a round of the panel. We actually had a couple people add themselves to the panel while you've been on. Is that okay right now? Do you do that, or you want to share some more?
No, absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. All right, panelists, I do want to remind you, Charles has told us Chaz is what he's comfortable being called by his friends, and you are surrounded by friends tonight, Chaz. And also, when I bring you on, please keep your comments and your questions relative to Charles' story, even if they relate to yours, relate your story with us, but let's keep it around Charles' story and what he's, or Chaz's story and what he's sharing with us this evening. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to start in reverse order. We had somebody, I know this is a Philly person, because it's 215 area code, but we don't have a name, so let me go ahead and get this 215 area code on. 215-767, I'm not going to say the last four. Good evening and welcome. Who do we have?
My name is Matt. I'm from Philadelphia, and I would consider myself a friend of Charles, and I just wanted to say how much I appreciate his honesty and introspection, and I'm hoping that at some point he recognizes the voice, but I can tell you that this is a genuine man who lives his story and owns this story. And I have a lot of love for Charles, which if he prefers that.
Well, Well, you're on live with him right now, Matt. If you want to share some, you know, talk with him a little, or I guess Chad, you know Matt.
Matt is a good friend of mine for about 15 years now.
Yeah, so
that's
Charles
beautiful.
And I, so Chaz and I, we grew through a relationship of working with similar populations of children in different aspects, and also coaching football. And it is interesting, and I think one of the key elements to the story is kindness between men is important, because we never really understand what another man is going through, even if we spend a great amount of time with them. And so when you start to see that behaviors change, or when you start to see that things you don't understand creep up, it is important to continue to show love and continue to grow and reach for understanding, rather than to judge things you don't understand. And that was one of the things that I really took from my years of relationship with Charles.
That's some powerful stuff right there, Matt.
Appreciate that, Matt.
He's a powerful guy.
Wow.
I'm just being honest.
Hey, we got three Philly guys on this show right now. Watch out, world. So I'm from Philly too. I'm from Philly too, Matt. I grew up literally all over the city in foster homes and orphanages. But today's not my show. Tonight's about Chaz, and I'm a Charles as well. So I'm going by Charlie from my last place
no
I lived was in South Philly. But welcome to the show, Matt.
I'm going to excuse myself from the show out of respect for all parties, but I just wanted to show a little love and continue to listen on my own and defer to the man. Thank you,
Matt.
Well,
we thank you for being here. And Matt, and we look forward to bringing you back on the next round of panelists. About every 15, 20 minutes, Matt, we'll bring we mute the mic to the panelists in between segments, and then about every 15, 20 minutes, we'll bring the panelists on to interact with Chaz. So thanks, Matt, for calling
good.
In. Truly appreciate you, bro. Next we're going to go to Washington State, and we're going to go to Penelope in Washington. Penelope, you are on with Chaz from Philly.
Thanks, Charlie. Hi, Chaz.
Hello, Penelope.
Hi. I have to say, I'm not sure if you're aware of what's going on in Seattle, but today apparently the police finally did go in, so it was called the Chaz Zone, which became the Chop Zone. And apparently the police finally took it under siege and made some arrests. But I'll tell you something. You have totally, reincarnated the name Chaz for me, because the story I just heard took a lot of courage, and it's a difficult one to tell. But it's something that it's a beautiful thing to be able to come on the show and be able to state your truth, because not only are you honoring yourself, but you're honoring all of us who have experienced childhood sexual abuse and abuse. So as you were telling your story, I'm female, but I had a very similar experience, so I could resonate with a lot of what you were sharing. And I took some notes, actually, on what you were stating, and you mentioned at 35 you went into counseling. I am getting to your question, by the way. So at 35 you went into counseling, and you've got an amazing, amazing wife. You did not want to lose her. You went into counseling for her, but it sounds to me like, from what I heard, you know, it was hard for you to show the world your imperfections, that being perfect was your protection in your life. And it sounds like, I mean, obviously your dad swore you to secrecy after his heinous crimes to protect himself. Your mother told you to not show your imperfections, not tell your truth, because she felt that was the way to protect you. He held its reinforcement that you can never let him see you as anything but perfect. I can relate to that myself as well. So perfection was obviously your armor against your abuser, your abuse, and your way to survive. But I guess my question is this. It sounds to me, in the present day, you initially went to counseling to save your marriage, but it sounds to me like you're now going to counseling for yourself. And I'm curious as to when you came into that realization.
Good question. You know, so it took me probably about 6 months to stop BSing, you know, to stop just showing up to say I was showing up. And it wasn't that I made a plan to avoid and evade and be dishonest during therapy. I just couldn't go there. I felt.
Well, yeah. Oh, no, it's your story. Well, no, I understand that, because when you have used being perfect, right, and being as your armor, as your protection, you know, for so long, it takes, from what I'm hearing, it takes so long to strip that down, right, to release those layers and to allow yourself to completely, you know, be seen for all of the, you know, all the truths and all the things that that happened to you and the true reason why you're there. I mean, that's what I'm hearing you saying. I can resonate with that. It's nothing. It happens overnight.
No, it doesn't. And in a lot of ways, I'm still doing it. Still stripping away being perfect. It's getting easier, but I would be lying if I told you that I don't have to get up in the morning and do my self-affirmations before I start my day. I had to continually work to rid myself of these cognitive distortions that I still carry with me deeply. Being a therapist now and understanding how trauma affects the brain of a child gives me insight to why I behaved the way I have and why it's taken me so long to change these patterns that can be seen as self-destructive. And maybe not to that extreme, but, you know, for me, it's recovery is not a destination. It's kind of like the road, you know, you're just constantly moving. And when you think you hit the destination, something comes up and you realize, you know what? This is just it, right? The recovery is just getting better every day. It's not, I'm going to get there and now I'm good. And I think that's what I thought. I thought that I'm going to go to therapy, I'm going to talk about my problems, I'm going to get these new tools, and then I'm going to be healed, and then that's it. I have no more issues. And I've learned that that's not the case.
Yep, pretty much. I always say, it's like when I first started myself, I wish it was like when you go to Disneyland or Disney World, you can get like a couple fast passes and get to the front of the line. There's like no fast pass. And it's more like, you know, there's no fast pass. And it's like painting the Golden Gate Bridge, painting a bridge. It's like you start painting the bridge at the beginning of the bridge. And then when you get to the end, you got to go back to the beginning because a lot of the paint's starting to peel off, right? You just keep going.
Yes.
So it sounds like you're going.
Yeah. I mean, it's perspective, right? Once you accept that that's what it is, things become a lot easier, you know, once you realize it, what it is. You know, I think the not knowing, and again, it goes back to these cognitive distortions, you know, these should have, could have, would have, that will just drive you mad if you continue to think that way.
Yeah, you just basically describe acceptance.
Yes.
You know, exactly.
Wow.
Which is the most difficult part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
My dogs are greeing in the background, sorry. wow. Well, we actually had two more callers call in while you've been on, Penelope. So it's okay, Chaz, I'm going to bring in our next panelist?
Yes, sure.
All right. Penelope, truly appreciate you. See you next round, okay?
Thanks, Charlie.
You're welcome. Thank you. We're going to go to Katarina from Canada. Chaz, Katarina is a fairly regular on our show as a panelist. And Katarina, welcome. You're on with Chaz.
Hi. Well, I'm so glad I called because what a great topic. Chaz, like, you're right on as to, you know, waking up to the realization that trauma is the root cause of a lot of our problems and a lot of our addictions and negative behaviors. This is fascinating, and I'm so glad that you're at a stage in your life where you have all this knowledge, you have the lived experience, and now you can help people. Grateful to have you on here, and you know, I look forward to hearing more of your story. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Katarina, as always. Okay. So my amazing co-host, Joe, is wonderfully waiting, and I'm going to get you on, Joe. We do have another 215 area code caller to call in. So I'm going to go ahead and key up their mic, 215-919. I'm not going to say the last four because we don't do that here. Good evening. You're on the air with Chaz. Who do we have?
Hi, my name is Caroline. I'm Chaz's sister.
Oh.
Hey, Caroline. Wow, Chaz, your sister's here to support you as well.
Thank
awesome.
You.
Well, welcome, Caroline.
Hi, how are you? Charlie, how are you
wow.
doing?
I'm good, sis. I'm good.
Somebody's talking. My dog's going to start saying hello in a minute. So,
yeah.
Your brother's showing amazing strength tonight and fortitude, Carolyn, I got to tell you. Just an amazing man. I'm from Philly as well, of all things, but I live up in the Pocono Mountains now. But your brother's doing really, really well. And just, yeah. And thank you so much for coming on here and being supportive of him. Wow. I don't think I've had a sibling or a family member call in yet on one of the shows. Joe will remind me if I'm right or wrong, but thank you so much, Carolyn.
Well, I really wanted to support him and let him know how much I love him and support him and how much he means to me as a protector growing up. You know, even though I'm his older sister, he always protected me from everyone else.
Wow.
He's just a kind person and just a deeply caring person. It's hard to imagine someone who goes through something like this, and I can't even have any. I mean, we lost our father about 5 years ago, and I can honestly say I couldn't even cry that I lost him, like my own father, because of what he did to my brother. And just the amount of love that my brother shows for everyone that, you know, he surrounds himself with, I just find it amazing. He's such
well,
a caring person.
I'm going to say it for him. I don't even know you, haven't met you yet, but what an amazing sister he has. I would be blessed to have you as my sister, but thank you so very much. Wow. Chaz, what do you... Whew, how do you even say anything with that? I mean, I'm sitting here with tears in my eyes. Happy tears,
yeah,
but wow.
My sister is a proud member of the Philadelphia Fire Department. And I went to the Marine Corps when I was 18. And my sister is tougher than I am. Carol, you know I love you.
That's what he said.
Love you.
Well,
I love you too.
Wow, beautiful. Carolyn, thank you for your service to the city of Philadelphia, working for the Philadelphia Fire Department.
My pleasure.
I used to know several Philadelphia firefighters. Still friends with many of them. So thank you for what you do every day, putting your life on the line out there to save other lives. So thank you.
I appreciate that. You guys.
I'm sorry. Sorry about that, Chaz. I accidentally cut it. I'm going to get Joe, my co-host, on. She's been patiently waiting as I was bringing other guests in. Joe, you are on with Chaz. I apologize for the long wait.
Hey, that's okay. This is good stuff. Hi, Chaz. Thank you for being here, and thank you for sharing your story. It sounds like it's kind of hard to get out, but it's very helpful to others who are going through that and maybe haven't come as far along as you are. The question I had is, I sort of resonated when you said I became angry at God because in my mind he hated me first. And I was wondering how you worked through that, or if you've worked through that, and if so, yeah. How?
Oh, my God, such a beautiful question. Thank you, Joe. I have. I've had worked through it. You know, I think for me, the hardest part was always hearing that God gives you never, the thing that God never gives you more than what you can handle. And I would hear that like it was in the Bible. Like I literally thought that it was in the Bible. That was a Bible verse. That God maybe give you more than you can handle. Oh my goodness. It was maybe 10 years ago or so. Probably about the time I was going to therapy. I went to Applebee's with my family. We were sitting down and they had a local paper. A neighborhood paper. I just picked it up while we were sitting there waiting to be seated. And there was an article written by a Catholic priest, Father John, and he does this once a month. And in the article, he was talking about how people confuse that God never gives you more than what you can handle with God never puts you in a position of sin. Once I realized, yes, so once I realized that wasn't true, then I'm like, wait a minute. You know, I saw things differently. I just felt there was no way because I was drowning. I was drowning, and there was no way. And, you know, my family were Christian. I'm Christian. And my friends and people who I, you know, I value for the religious teachings were never really told me that, you know, and so I always felt like God was against me, like there was something that I did, you know, which when I look at it now, I feel very silly about it, but I also say that because God is God, he understands, you know, so that's kind of how I made my, I kind of reconciled that. I started praying again, I started reading the Bible, and It took me a long while to find a church, but a friend of mine invited me to his church, and I've been going ever since for about 2.5 years.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm all goosebumps because it's just a great turnaround. And thank you for sharing that. Oh, that's wonderful.
Well, thank you for bringing it up.
Joe, as always, thank you for being a great co-host. And being so patient and waiting so long, I apologize for doing that. So love you, sis, and we'll bring you back on the next segment. Hey, Chaz, we have another caller from apparently Philadelphia because I recognize the 215. Let's find out who we have here. 215-301. Who do we have on the line?
Hi.
Hello?
Hello, is this 215-301? I'm not going to say your last four numbers because we don't put phone numbers out on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'm Denise. I'm Charles's wife. I'm Chaz's wife.
Wonderful. We have Chaz's wife, his sister, this is, and a bunch of, we have, man, I'm getting new sisters tonight. I got a new brother. This is beautiful. And Chaz, what is your lovely wife's name?
We call her Niecy.
Yeah, I go by Niecy. My name is Denise, but I've always been
all right, Niecy.
Close to family and friends. Yeah. That's me.
We got you in here. Well, Niecy, wow, this is amazing. So the journey you've traveled with Chaz, I what an amazing story to be there and be through this. I know it's Chaz's story and you're part of it. Chaz, what do you want to share with your wife? Tonight it's your, you know, hey, It's you and her. It's her show too. Be part of it.
It was pretty difficult for him in the beginning, I have to say. He makes me very proud. He does. He's come a long, long way from what we were before, what he was before, because it was hard for him. And for me to see him so trapped in his own mind, and just like he would just stare off into space, and he starts thinking. And when he starts thinking, I know and I can feel that something's wrong. So I could see the pain that he was going through, and he gives me a lot of praise for doing what he's done, but it's all him. It really is. It really is. I was just that little push to get him started, but it was all him. And my children and I are very proud to have him in our lives. He's done a lot for so many people. He's hardworking. He's very kind-hearted. He can be hard-headed too. But overall, like his sister said, like his sister said earlier, you know, a person that's gone through as much as he has and to accomplish as much as he has, that's something to be proud of. That's something to, like, scream from the mountaintops, you know. So I just wanted to call in and just you know, give him his props because he deserves it. And I'm so proud that he's doing this project. He's moving forward, and he got on this radio show, which is awesome. This is, like, one of his highlights.
Well, we're honored.
I appreciate you, Charlie, for having him on your show and telling his story.
Well, this is our show. Everybody here is family. We're all brothers and sisters throughout the world. I happen to be from Philly, born and raised. Tonight's not my story, so that's for a different day. But I'm just honored to be here. And, wow, the amazing people you have surrounding you, Chaz, your wife, your sister. And these are just the people who are calling. I couldn't imagine what you actually have out there in the community. So our panelists that are calling in for the first time, just so you know, what I do is I mute the mic in between bringing you on, so that way Chaz can share his story. Chaz, you had said something in speaking with Joe when you and her were talking about Joe asked you about God, right? You recall that, right? You talked about your Bible and things.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I may, and this is your show, back when I was still living in Philly, I was working with an organization called Stand Up for Kids. And one of the kids asked me one night, and this is what the Stand Up for Kids is, an organization that helped runaway kids that were living down in the subways and down at Love Park and all those places like that, on the streets, basically. And one of those kids asked me, well, if God loves me so much, why'd he let me be abused? And I went home that, and I told that child, that young man, I don't know the answer. I wish I could give you. I was ready to throw out all the Bible verses we all know, and that wasn't the answer because it didn't make me happy. So I really went home and I reflected on it. And when I did, I came up with a piece that I wrote that has now been published in several places. And I was wondering, again, no obligation for me to share this tonight, but I was wondering if you would mind if I shared it on your show tonight, Chaz.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, again, this is your show. I just wanted to. It just kind of felt, when I heard that, I immediately went and pulled it up. So the title is A Friend Asked Me, Where is God in His Love When a Child is Being Abused? We child abuse survivors and witnesses get angry with God because we see Him as the only one able to stop the abuse. But really, it was the people in our lives who let us down, not God. I believe that God grieved mightily with tears streaming down His face as He saw us being harmed. I also believe He became angry with the adults in our lives who ignored His instruction in the Bible to protect and love the children. I don't believe it's God's responsibility to protect our children. It is our responsibility to protect the children He puts in our care. I protect my child because I love her. I was not protected because I was not loved by some of those whose care I was placed in. That's a choice of men, not of God. God's desire is that we all would love each other with His love. He offers us this opportunity in many ways, including our children, because God continues to have hope that His love will prevail in our lives. Despite all that I witnessed and survived, God made me strong and gave me the gifts of disassociation to enable me to survive the abuse. God is the only one who helped me. My parents and the foster mother who murdered my brother sure didn't. God wasn't present in the foster homes, counselors, and people who took me under their wings and gave me love. God has also taken something as horrible as our abuse and brought lots of good and beauty from it. Because I survived and many others survived, we know that more can survive. Because I am healing, I know others can heal, and I encourage them. In closing, I want to say, no, I would never choose to experience abuse or for anyone else to experience it. And this is why I take my responsibility seriously in helping any child abuse survivor that I can. And it goes on a little further, but I'm just going to cut it off from there because it's getting too personal. But, wow, when I heard what you said, Charles, Chaz, powerful stuff, man. And the love and support you have with your wife and your sister here tonight. And I know you had a friend call in. Matt had to drop off and I guess go in to do something. But and you're speaking so just. I don't sense nervousness. I'm just very comfortable. And this is the tough thing for us as men to talk about. I mean, I didn't even realize I was sexually abused until. I mean, I had been abused in so many other ways. I guess sexual abuse is the one I thought I escaped. And then I realized many years later when I was at a speaking engagement that sexual abuse actually was and a part of my childhood that I just didn't really relate to it as sexual abuse. Because to me, it was you alluded to something earlier when you were sharing about in your early stages of your story about, you kind of thought it was enjoyable and understandable because you didn't understand what was happening. And that manipulation of that portion of our body brings on that feeling. So I can identify with that. So, wow. Thank you for letting me share that, Charles. Chaz, I didn't want to jump in on your show and then that piece just really jumped out to me when I heard that.
No, I appreciate that. I think that, I think spirituality or, belief in God, at least for me, has been it's been the piece that I needed to be able to move on with my life, to not feel like I was again go back to the cognitive distortion because of what happened to me when I was five. I always feel like I'm not wanted and not loved. At times it's a struggle for me to remember all the things that I had. Not as much anymore, but when I was going through the process of therapy. Right now, I cherish and appreciate the people that I have around me. Charlie, let me tell you that my family, my immediate family, my wife, and I have three children. Right now they're all adults, 22, 21, and 19. My youngest is my daughter. And I raised them and my wife raised them to the best of our abilities, and they're wonderful children. And they were the best part of my life. There's nothing that I can do that's going to be better than them. They are the best part of my life. But my my family, my brother, my sisters always support me, man. Even when we're going through our family stuff like family does, always support me regardless of what's going on in their lives. When I was finishing up my undergrad, I was $1,600 short to finish my last class. And my sister, I was like sad. I was like, fudge, I need this. I want to graduate, because I went back to school when I was 28. So, I'm an adult learner, I want this degree because it's an accomplishment for me. And my sister lent me the money without hesitation, she's not rich by any means, but it was like, take it. I want you to finish your degree. I've always had that support from my family and my place of work. I work for this agency in Philadelphia called Children's Crisis Treatment Center. And I've been there going on 16 years. This place has supported me in my recovery They've encouraged it, which in turn helped me feel like what I was saying and what I was doing was the right thing. So I have all this immense support, I do, from people who read my blog and send me emails, from people who post on my Facebook page. I have this tremendous amount of support. But I know everybody doesn't have that, right? When I was in my journey of recovery, I felt isolated with the fact that I couldn't find material for men. And rightly so, a lot of the material that I found was for women. Rightly so, 100%. But it made me feel like I was the only one that went through this, the only man that went through this, you know, which made it kind of tough on me, especially being my culture, you know, being a Latino and being a man, you're supposed to be able to do things on your own. You know, you get a cup, rub some mud on it, get up and keep going. So the fact that, you know, it was so difficult for me was hard, you know, and you know, God forbid, a Latino male even have any type of thoughts of homosexuality. That was like shunned, you know. So I was like in fear in my head to even discuss that I even had those thoughts as a teen. So as I progressed in my therapy and feeling more secure, I decided, you know what, I want to be a therapist because this person helped me change my life. And I want to do that. I want to help other people, you know, assist them in rewriting their narratives. So I did that. I became a mental health therapist. And, you know, right now I'm a clinical supervisor for a partial program, which means our kids, we're a hospitalization program, but our kids get to go home at the end of the day. If it was an inpatient, that's the difference between partial and inpatient. But I'm at the point in my recovery where I feel like I need to do more for men. My blog largely was kind of for that reason. I wanted men to feel like they were the only one. So a few years ago, I started on this project, the 20-year journey. And the reason that it's called the 20-year journey, because on average, it takes a man 20 years to get help from sexual abuse. On the average, it takes 20 years.
It took me 30, so I understand, Chaz, absolutely.
Yeah, so what this pick is going to be, and I've been working on it for about 2 years now, and I've been getting interviews with men who have been sexually abused and as children and what they're doing now and the positive things that they're doing in life. And not lying or hiding the darkness that comes from that you have to go through in order to get to the other side. You know, for a while there, Charlie, I really thought that despair, that dread that I was feeling going to therapy was never going to go away. You know, it was scary stuff. You know, I had, when I was going through therapy, I swore I saw my father walking down the street. And at this point, he had already passed away. It was to the point where I kind of had to go over and make sure I didn't see him, you know. These are things that your mind plays tricks on you when you're going through therapy, and it's difficult, you know. And I struggle with that even still. You know, I had a few years ago as a grown man, right? As a grown man, and understand I'm secure in myself. I feel safe. I know that people can't hurt me. I know my father can't hurt me. I understand these things. But I had a nightmare where my father was trying to abuse me, but I'm a grown man. I'm like the way I am now. And he tells me to turn around and pull my pants in, and I do. And I get up, and I wet my bed from the fear.
Wow.
So I get up, I jump, and I run to the bathroom and I take a shower and I get upset and I'm mad and I'm pissed because I'm thinking myself, even in my dreams, this guy got me. You know, even in my dreams, like, I'm not faking my dreams. So, and that's kind of where I got to the point where recovery isn't a destination more than it's constant, you know, constantly working. Because what was done to me can't be erased, right? What was done to you can't be erased. What was done to people, especially, that doesn't go away. That's part of who we are now. So with the 20-year journey, I want men to feel like they don't have to be scared to say, I was sexually abused. You know, I want men to be able to say that it's okay for me to ask for help. I want to say that masculinity or your masculinity isn't affected by the fact that you're saying, I need help, that you don't have to be perfect at everything you do. You know, that your achievements in life really are great, you know, at the moment. But with the important things in life are the relationships that we build. You know, the people who care about us. Our core experience, what trauma does to us, right, it takes away our power and it takes away our ability to connect to people. And that's where it really hurts. You know, so a survivor has to be able to write their own narrative. You know, they have to be able to do that on their own with support. You know, but they have to be able to do the work, you know, empowerment. You know, that's how we write the story, like being empowered to change, by being empowered to be better, by being able to create these meaningful relationships, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hey, Chaz, would you mind if we did another? Because believe it or not, I always say an hour and a half sounds like a long time, and we're already into the last half hour of the show, believe it or not. You mind if I do another round with the panel real quick?
Let's do it.
All right. We got Penelope from Washington. Penelope, you're back on with Chaz.
Thanks, Charlie. Hi, Chaz. Oh, my gosh. First of all, I have to say, your wife, I got tears in my eyes. I mean, how wonderful that you have such a supportive spouse and family, and I just celebrate that with you and for you. That was just something else. So I'm glad that I was here to witness that. But the statement I guess I wanted to make and maybe the question was, and listening to what you just, you know, shared, especially about feeling almost so alone in voicing and bringing your voice to not only being molested, but, you know, men being molested by their fathers, children, not only children being molested by their parents, which is so hard for people to talk about or acknowledge, but especially men. And, you know, you talked about earlier in the show about younger, you know, being scared, being in the closet, and then about also you dissociated, right? And almost shame, a little shame around not being able to remember or being numb to it, shame about responding to it, shame about coming out with it. And so there's a lot of talk that I hear in your words and in your work about working just through the shame, which is something I think a lot of us can resonate with, is the shame. And I'm just curious as to if, you know, releasing that shame and talking about it and bringing it into the limelight, if coming to terms with that is also kind of resonating in the work that you do with children now.
Yes. You know, your shame is so toxic, you know, it makes us, I keep going back to this, but the cognitive distortion is, it's because of the shame, right? Everything we do to hide from that shame. And in my work with children, understanding, so what we do know about, trauma and how to help children who have been traumatized is that safety's first, right? They have to feel safe. And There's different ways of doing that. And to the outside world, it doesn't always appear. I think somebody sees a child who's misbehaving, and they say that child needs his ass whooped because that's why they'll stop misbehaving. The thing is that most of the kids that I see in our program, they've gone through that, right? They've been disciplined, they've been hit, and they still are misbehaving. The reason for that is they don't feel safe. And if they can't feel safe, then nothing else works. So in our program, it takes, it could be a month up to 3 months before we can build that safety with the child. And once they feel safe in our program, things start to change. They start being able to use their coping skills. They start to be able to slow down and pause, not always reacting with the amygdala, you know, just, you know, that part of the brain that's so reactive. We want them to be able to pause that. And people don't understand that. People will see a child and say, out of nowhere, you know, he just flipped the table, or out of nowhere, he just got up and hit another child. But if you understand trauma, that's exactly what a trauma response is something that went on in this child's mind that made him feel unsafe. I think for me, and I think for a child, because they don't think and constantly, they can't really formulate the thought the way an adult can. I think my shame came from the fact that I was 35 years old. I was a Marine. I grew up in the tough streets of Philadelphia, and I was scared, you know. So, and I didn't feel safe, and I couldn't say it out loud, you know. So, the shame of being a man who's fearful—that was difficult.
And see, when I hear what you're doing and the work that you're doing with the children, and can you imagine if 5-year-old Chaz met present day Chaz in a counseling session, and how you would have really blossomed, and what an impact that would have made to your 5-year-old self? And I do think, as you know, when you're working with children and you're kind of in the work that you're doing, and you're kind of reparenting yourself, right? You're kind of going back and giving that little 5-year-old, you know, the opportunity to kind of grow up too. At least I'm drawing that parallel to what you're doing, and I'm not sure if you're finding that that's part of what you're doing or it's helping, but it sounds to me like it may be.
I do see the parallels. You know, if I'm being honest, for a long time, even after I went to therapy and even after I became a therapist, I hated that 5-year-old child. And I wouldn't say it out loud because I'm like, no, you know, that child deserves kindness. You know, that child deserves patience. That child was innocent. And I couldn't put my thumb on why I just keep angry at my 5-year-old self, you know. And it goes back to the ability of not being able to protect myself. At five, right? So I finally forgiven myself for being 5, you know. and part of my work with the children has brought me full circle, you know. It has. And it's not lost on me, and I don't think it's a coincidence that I'm doing this type of work with children.
Wow.
Well, they're really lucky to have a Chaz in their life. Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you for being on with us tonight, Penelope. We really appreciate you, as always. Let's go to Katerina in Canada. Katerina, you're back on with Chaz.
Hi, Chad. You're such an incredible person. You have a beautiful, lovely family, and everything that you've been through is just heartbreaking, but, you know, you are the epitome of a survivor and a hero. Like, it's people like you that make up heroes nowadays, and I mean, this is such a skeleton in the closet type of story that I know many people have gone through, but no one talks about it. And then to hear you speak about it, it's so powerful. And it's healing, even for me to listen to this healing. It's like, finally, like, just let the skeletons out of the closet. Let's do something about it. And the system that serves, you know, children that have gone through abuse in youth homes and children programs, like, it puts the pressure on them to become trauma-informed. And that will only come through people like you. So you are literally changing the way by which society handles the care of youth and children. Thank you for all your work. Thank you for your knowledge, for inspiring us all. And I know there's going to be many, many lucky children and youth and trauma survivors that you're going to change their lives just like you did mine. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Catalina, thank you. As always, your input is always right on time. We truly appreciate you calling in from Canada, Catalina. Let's go ahead and bring on Joe, my amazing co-host this evening, and then right after that, we're going to bring on your sister, Carolyn. Hey, Joe, you're back on with Chaz.
Thank you. I'll make it quick. The 20-year journey, that, I think, is going to be an incredible documentary for so many people, for especially men, to realize for the adult male survivors. So what gave you the idea, or how did you come around to that? You mentioned a little bit about it, but do you have a distribution planned and all of that kind of stuff?
So I've really been kind of piecemealing this thing. So a few years ago, when I decided to do this documentary, I think that I just felt like there was a void. And I wrote this blog, but with my work, it's difficult to sit down and type. By the time I'm done from work, I'm really done with looking at the computer. So I wanted to pick a medium that I know that people could watch and that could be widely distributed, even if it was like on YouTube. So I decided this was the way to go. I had a background for photography, and I kind of researched and did some work with cinematography and figuring out. And with my background in photography, the transition was fairly simple. So it was just about finding the men who are willing to tell your story. And I have unfortunately, like this show, who has many people who can tell their story, I was able to find men who are willing to tell their stories. The thing is that this is it does cost some money to make a documentary, so that's why it's kind of taking me so long. I've funded it mostly. I started a Facebook campaign, and through that to raise money, and through that recently I have received more money, and the things, I think, when you think of a project like this, people think it's getting the people that are filming, but it's also the logistics of going to them, and then it's also the editing and also mixing the sound. So it's a process that goes through, and I just don't want this to I want this to be done in a way that people will accept it and get the message and won't be distracted by the lack of production. So I want the production to be high value. And that's, so at this point, my goal is for this film to be completed by next spring at the latest.
Mm.
So, in however, I still have fundraising. So, if I get all the funds that I need, then by the spring, we should be done. We should be ready.
Well, I hope you do. I hope you send out another fundraising thing because I'll certainly contribute toward it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Hello?
Yes, hello?
Hi, Charlie, it's me again.
Hey.
Go ahead and talk, Carolyn, with Chaz. I think Charlie is mic's off or something. Thanks.
Oh, okay.
I apologize. Yes. I had my mic muted because my dog was barking at the fireworks in the background, and I'm sitting here talking, saying, nobody's responding. What's going on? All right, yeah, Carolyn, I apologize. Yeah, you're back on with your brother. Thank you for being so patient and waiting all that time.
No worries. Of course, I'm going to listen and support him. What I wanted to say to my brother was I don't think he realized how much God has led him to his path. Even after everything that's happened to him, he's always been a defender of the weak. He learned through my mother to always defend anyone in need. There was a time where there was a woman who was being attacked, and she was going to be raped, and it was actually underneath the L. You should know where the L is, underneath Kensington. And my brother was stabbed multiple times trying to save this woman. Mm. Yes, he still has the scars, nice, these big, huge scars. And to him, it was, well, I had to save her. I mean, right place at the right time. It was, he's just the kind of person, and he doesn't realize God gave him the strength to be able to stand up to people that are bullying somebody else, to, you know, be a kind person when someone needs a good word, maybe, you know, some uplifting. And that's a big deal. And he doesn't realize, just talking to children, how much that just changes their life forever. And maybe reading something, maybe an article, might make you think, oh, this changes my idea of what God has for me. No, you've been doing it all your life. You just never realized you were doing it. He's done it for me. He's been there for me when I've been at my lowest. He was there and always smiling and with a firm hand. So he doesn't realize how much God has been in his life this whole time. And the thing about incest and molestation, it's a family disease. It's something that's repetitive, something that really hurts the whole family because of what happened to my brother. We're all hurt over what happened, you know, in my family. It's not just, it just shatters the family dynamic that everybody thinks, you know, but you deal with it and you support that person that you love, you know, and he had, yeah. And even with that, knowing that we're upset, he tries his best to make us feel good, which is the crazy part. You know. Go ahead.
Wow.
I love you, sis.
I love you too.
I do realize that while maybe I wasn't, my relationship with God wasn't where it should have been, that God never abandoned me. You know,
he never did.
And I could
just
see
never
that.
Realized he was
that.
Still there.
Right. No, absolutely. No, you're right. You're right, and I understand that now.
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Beautiful testimony.
I mean, no matter what, it's the journey that you're on is such an amazing journey right now. And I think God had this set for you. No matter, God gave us free will, and obviously our father went the wrong path, but your path is set to do the best for everyone else. And that's what you have to remember. And the best for you. This is not,
Absolutely. This
is, you didn't do anything wrong. It was all him. You did nothing wrong.
There you go. There you go. Powerful words from your sister. We are down to, believe it or not, 4 minutes of the show. It's just amazing how an hour and a half goes by. Is it okay to call you after the show? I know we exchange phone numbers, but I don't like calling people after a certain hour without permission.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
We'll definitely continue the conversation. I want to give you a few minutes to give some closing remarks, and then I want to bring each of our panelists in for an opportunity to give you a fond farewell this evening. Carolyn, I'm going to keep your mic queued up. I'm not going to mute it like I normally would. But Jazz, go ahead and give us some closing. You've given us so many nuggets and so much power, but whatever's on your heart right now, put it out there.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that I felt for so many years that if people found out that I was molested, that people would think I was weak, that I was less of a man because that happened to me. And while rationally I could probably say, no, that wouldn't happen, emotionally I felt like that was absolutely true. But my experience has been absolutely the opposite. I receive an outpouring of support from everybody who has read my blog, who has heard about my abuse. It's always been positive, and I never felt like they were trying to shame me. The only shame I felt was the shame I put on myself. But this whole experience of telling my story and taking back my story has really changed my life. And I feel that more people need to do that. They need to take control of their own narrative. They need to tell their story. And it doesn't happen overnight. You know, it's a process, but it's life-changing.
Absolutely. Well, powerful, powerful message. I'm going to bring on Joe. We are down to the 90-second mark. Joe, I know you heard it. Some closing remarks from Jazz.
Thank you for being here. Bless you. You are an inspiration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, Penelope?
Well, being from Seattle, you know, we have the 12th man. But that's really about cheering someone else on. And tonight I heard your wife and your sister, and you've got all of us cheering you on. We are truly your 12th men, and I just wish you well for the rest of your journey.
Thank you.
Thanks, Penelope. I know we had a last-minute caller, area code 587, first few numbers 856. Unfortunately, it's you, Katarina. All right, Katarina, are you for a quick fond farewell to Chaz?
Yes, Chad, thanks for being on. You're going to change the world, one child, one youth, one traumatized person at a time. Just keep at it. I just know you're going to move mountains, and thank you for being here and for having the courage to call in. Thank you.
Thank you.
And, Chad, we do have a last-minute 215-704 calling in. 215-704. Who do we have here? Hello, area code 215, first three numbers 704. Oh, they dropped. Okay. Jazz, it's been an amazing journey with you this evening. I truly appreciate your internal fortitude. I myself am a veteran as well. We'll talk about that afterwards. Definitely related to most of everything you said. So thank you so much. You've been a gracious guest, and I'm jealous of your mustache. I was looking at your pictures. So, hey, we have the entire panels queued up. So, Joe and the rest of the panel who know I've done this in the past, I want to send Chaz off with a round of applause and a fond farewell and a Yahoo. So let's do that for him.
Yay!
Chaz, thank you.
Yay! Woo!
Thank you.
Amazing.
You are life to life, brother, and your entire family is. I can see the joy in your face and the spirit in your eye when I look at your pictures, and I'm already promoting your work on my social network, and look forward to talking to you shortly. Folks, this has been the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name's Charlie, and as I close every Wednesday night show, I want to remind you that the only adult not responsible for child abuse intervention and prevention is any adult who themselves ever a child. Good night, and God bless one and all.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was good. You are forgotten after all that you've done. Another tomorrow, that dawn was good.
Log Talk Radio.